From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. It's March the 12th, 2017, the second Sunday in March, and this is our weekly look behind the politics and policies that make or don't make Chicago, the state, and Washington run. Time to grab the Sunday paper, get that hot cup of coffee, turn the clocks forward an hour if you haven't already done so, and we'll try to get your day and week off to a great start. It's 7:07 on this Sunday morning, a big St. Patrick's Day weekend in Chicago. We had the downtown parade yesterday. The river is still green. There's probably still some faces that are a little green. And today we got the Southside Irish Parade going. Dave, I have to tell you, I strictly avoided downtown yesterday.
That's what you said, yes. What's this about turning green? Are you insinuating anything here?
Well, I know that there's some people that are known to imbibe a little bit on the holiday.
Well, that has a tendency to happen, doesn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, I was thinking this is like a week-long deal now because, Friday is St. Patrick's Day, so there's an excuse for all kinds of celebration all week
long. Well, there were several celebrations last weekend as well, in addition to this weekend. So, you know, definitely more than a week-long partying.
Yeah.
And started at the first of the month.
You can celebrate pretty much anything now. I mean, there was a National Ice Cream Day last week, right? I mean, we can always find something.
There was, I believe, National Meatball Day.
That was
my point
holiday.
Stands. Shawnee, we can find something.
Yeah, yes, we can.
National News Anchor Day. That's coming up next month.
That would be good.
I'm just making things up.
But why not?
That would coincide with the enemy of the people, wouldn't it?
No, that's fake news if
fake
you
news.
Say there's a National News Anchor Day. Although there should be.
National Fake News Day taking the place of April Fool's Day, perhaps?
Well, that's true, you know. You got to wonder about April Fool's Day, actually, about whether you really, all those places that used to put out the, you know, kind of goofy, wrong news, whether that's going to go away this
year.
Yeah,
right. Just things being what they are.
People taking things seriously.
Turns out it's actually April 4th. That's National Anchor Day, Shawnee.
Is it really?
Is it really?
Yes. So real news, not fake news.
I'll see you all down at the Billy Goat.
April 4th, National Anchor Day.
And we'll all celebrate with you in your honor for all you've done to spread the joy of the news of the day.
Sunshine Shawnee.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Oh, man. Well, we've got the Southside Irish Parade going. Blackhawks playing Minnesota in a matinee today at 11:30, and I'm a little frustrated. That 4-day layoff that they took, coming out of they had won 7 in a row, and then they proceed to lose back-to-back games, and there's perhaps no more important game of the regular season than today. I mean, they're a point behind Minnesota in the standings. Minnesota has one game in hand. But if you're really going to make a declaration that you're going to get, and frankly, remember, this plays into the standings as far as home rink advantage in the playoffs in the conference. So this is a big game, a very big game. And I'm sure I'll be hearing from Aunt Jo on the text line.
I was just
going to
say Aunt Jo will be chiming in.
Yes, yes, she will. Although I got to get an app to maybe take the profanity off of the text messages.
A filter?
Yes, a little filter would be nice. But a big sports day yesterday. I mean, got all these as we enter into the selection today for the NCAA men's basketball tournament. that Northwestern Wisconsin game was really nothing to watch yesterday, and I was actually really looking forward to it, but got down way early. I don't think Northwestern scored a basket till somewhere more than two minutes into the game. I don't know, Sam, if you got to see any of it.
I watched about 5 minutes. That was all I needed to see.
That's a pretty much, yeah.
But you made a prediction, though, about Northwestern.
Who did?
Sam did.
Oh, well, before the season, I thought they'd make the tournament. Right, yeah. And I told Justin Kaufman that last, I want to say it was last July or August before the season. But 76-48, that is not the way you write that one going in. Against Wisconsin.
No, you want to have some momentum. And I'm not saying they need to necessarily win the Big Ten tournament. And it's also weird, too, that being out in Washington, D.C., and I understand it's there because now Maryland is part of the conference. But
next year it's in New York City.
Well, I did see what day was the opening of the tournament? Was that Thursday or Friday?
I believe it was Thursday.
I think it was Thursday. And on StubHub, there were $6 tickets for the entire, all the first round Big Ten conference games. $6 at the Verizon Center in Washington. And even yesterday with the Wisconsin game, that was not a sellout either. I mean, I understand they're trying to improve their reach, and I guess so New York will be because of Rutgers, I'm assuming. As being part of the conference, but
that would be like having the Southeastern Conference championships in Portland, right? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, like I said, I understand their desire to, you know, fulfill their reach here, but I mean, the United Center was always packed for these things.
Yeah, usually, Chicago or Indy,
right,
have been the host cities in years past,
and they were packed. I mean, it was a nice central location too for a conference that's become pretty far flung. But we had that. We got John Gross losing his job at the University of Illinois as the men's basketball coach there. I know a lot of my Illini friends would say that that's long overdue. I'm not sure how long you can say that a basketball team is having a rebuilding year. And with Illinois, it seems like that's the way it's been for quite some time. And, of course, Jay Cutler is now history.
That was the big story this past week.
And I don't know anything about the guy that they signed.
Yeah, I don't either. Mike Glennon.
Really
Sam,
tall.
What do you know about him?
6'7", Shawnee.
He's 6'7"?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he's average.
He's average.
But for some people, all that matters is that he's not Jay Cutler, which is probably right. The wrong mindset to have. But, hey, whatever.
But that does not preclude the Bears from drafting a quarterback.
They still should. Ryan Pace has said for years he wanted to draft a quarterback. This is his third draft coming up. You would think that they would probably take one this draft.
Especially now. I mean, I don't even know who they've got as backup quarterbacks.
Connor Shaw is the backup now.
Who?
Exactly.
Who?
Rookie out of South Carolina. Well, he was a rookie last year from South Carolina. He broke, didn't he shatter his ankle, remember, in the preseason?
Oh, right, because then they had to go out and draft. That was Hoyer, right?
Well, they signed Hoyer for the agency. Signed,
yeah, okay.
And then Matt Barkley.
Oh, yes, right.
And then Dave Schwann was the four-stringer.
And field goal
There's
kicker,
a name
I
that was
too.
Thrown into the ring there. Who?
You've been known to throw them.
Yeah. Not necessarily footballs.
I did learn, like, 2 weeks ago that Schwann's a lefty, though.
You didn't know that?
I did not know
you
he was a lefty.
Know.
No.
Yeah. So, I've been all my life.
I pictured that.
And when is National Left-Handers Day?
Oh, well,
there's
got
to be that. There has to be that. That I'll celebrate. That I will celebrate.
Well, August 13th.
Okay, good. All right. There's another. Mark your calendars for that as well.
9 days before my birthday.
Perfect.
There's two things to celebrate.
Jeez.
Excellent.
When's left-handed news anchor day?
Yeah.
It's Friday, August the 13th.
That's perfect.
Then. Yeah.
That's perfect. The one thing I did, I kind of liked on Twitter about Cutler leaving was that that Jay Cutler was delivering a thank you message to the fans in Chicago, but it got intercepted on the way. I thought just how appropriate is that?
It got intercepted.
Yes, it was intercepted on the way for delivery. Yes. So telling. So telling.
Wow.
Well, Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Sam's got us up to date on all of the sports. Producer Jasmine's here to field your phone calls, and we're at 312-981-7200. You can text us at that same number, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. Engineer Bob is putting away the Guinness glasses from yesterday. And as always, if you have to tune away, you can find our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcasts at iTunes by searching for Rick Pearson. Up ahead today, after Dave gives us the 7:30 news update, we'll be speaking to my good friend Dan McGrath. Dan is president of Leo High School. He's the former Tribune sports editor. Leo is celebrating its 90th year, and the school is participating, as I said, in today's Southside Irish Parade to celebrate its roots. Dave's back with a news update at 8, and then we'll speak to State Representative Chris Welch, Democrat from Hillside, and we'll talk about his legislation aimed at helping local governments make sure they get the money they're owed from the state. And we'll probably be talking about that Springfield stalemate as well. We'll have more news at 8:30, and then we'll speak to Congressman Rodney Davis, a Republican from Taylorville in central Illinois. And we'll talk to him about the new House GOP replacement for Obamacare, which some are already labeling as Trump care. That's all ahead. This is the Sunday Spin. On this Sunday morning, 7:19 Central Daylight Time. So make sure you got your clocks adjusted accordingly. It's time for our weekly spin through national politics. We had on Friday President Trump firing the 46 United States attorneys. They were ordered to offer their resignation, clearing away the remaining prosecutors appointed by the Obama administration. Some were even told to vacate their offices by the close of business on Friday afternoon. There's a lot of news going on about Preet Bharara. He is the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, Manhattan, who had made a name for himself by aggressively prosecuting Wall Street and rooting out corruption in New York state government. It's interesting that he had met with Trump earlier and was asked if he could stay on, which he wanted to stay on. So when he was ordered to resign, he did not do so. And on Saturday, he tweeted that he had been fired. So that we have going on. Also, we're still got the Washington reaction to those tweets last week by President Trump alleging that the Obama White House secretly wiretapped his campaign phones in Trump Tower despite offering no evidence that it happened. Now, last Sunday after the show, former intelligence director James Clapper told Meet the Press's Chuck Todd it didn't happen.
If the FBI, for instance, had a FISA court order of some sort for a surveillance, would that be information you would know or not know?
Yes.
You would be told this.
I would know that.
If there was a FISA court order,
yes,
on something like this.
Something like this, absolutely.
And at this point, you can't confirm or deny whether that exists?
I can deny it.
There is no FISA court order?
Not to my knowledge.
Of anything at Trump Tower?
No.
Well, that's an important revelation at this point.
And so following that, last week on Fox News, former CIA director and NSA director, General Michael Hayden, said Trump looked like he had forgotten that he was the president.
Looks as if the president, just for a moment, forgot that he was president. And why didn't he simply use the powers of the presidency to ask the acting director of national intelligence, the head of the FBI, to confirm or deny the story he apparently read from Breitbart the evening before?
So you have the president's tweets making the allegation. We have days go by where people are looking for something to verify what the president said, people asking the White House to come up with some information to back up what the president said, and you have the president and the White House offering no evidence to back up the president's claim. Instead, Trump aides say it's up to Congress to try to find out.
Well, let's get to the bottom of it. That is the president's entire point. You have a number of, you have various incredible news sources showing that there was politically motivated activity all during the campaign and suggesting that there may be more there. I mean, I saw the different interviews over the weekend, and as some people left open the possibility that maybe there were departments or agencies or individuals not under their direct purview where this could have taken place. But the president's entire point is that the people deserve to know. So why not include in the existing investigations into Russia this aspect, that whether or not this actually happened?
Now, that's Kellyanne Conway on Fox News, who says that there's credible information, but again, there isn't any forthcoming from the White House. Let Congress do it. Now, you also have Republican Senator Marco Rubio. He, of course, was at one time a challenger for the Republican nomination to Trump. Well, Rubio is a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and he was interviewed by CNN, and basically, Rubio said he has no idea what the president is talking about.
Obviously, I'm not sure what it is he is talking about. Perhaps the president has information that is not yet available to us or to the public. And if it's true, obviously, we're going to find out very quickly. And if it isn't, then obviously he'll have to explain what he meant by it. So I'm not sure what the genesis of that statement was. But, I imagine we're going to learn more about it here over the next few days, one way or the other.
Except we really haven't learned more over the next few days. So Congress is supposed to investigate something of which there is so far is no evidence, and it's supposed to be part of the congressional investigation into Russian interference in our political process. Interesting on that note, Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois senior senator, a Democrat, asked the nominee for Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, about Russian influence in a Justice Department investigation during Rosenstein's confirmation hearing.
This was not put up by the Democratic National Committee. This was published by our intelligence agencies. And it's the reason that many of us believe this is not like an ordinary investigation by the Department of Justice. This is historic. It's always critical when it comes to filling these appointments. But this is an historic constitutional moment in our history. So I'd like to ask you, Mr. Rosenstein, will you commit that if you're confirmed, you will not impede or shut down any FBI or Justice Department investigation into Russian efforts to influence the 2016 U.S. presidential election?
Senator, on the issue of foreign interference in American elections, I can assure you that you and I are on the same side. I will certainly support any properly predicated investigation related to interference by the Russians or by anybody else in American elections.
I might say for the record that Attorney General Sessions was asked that same question at his confirmation hearing, and he would not make that same commitment.
Now, that's Senator Dick Durbin at the confirmation for Deputy Attorney General Ron Rosenstein. Now, while all of that was going on, House Republicans released their controversial plan to repeal and replace Obamacare. It's created a lot of dissension within the Republican ranks. But House Speaker Paul Ryan says the time has come to get rid of Obamacare and replace it with something that's being dubbed Trump Care.
This is the closest we will ever get to repealing and replacing Obamacare. The time is here. The time is now. This is the moment, and this is the closest this will ever happen. It really comes down to a binary choice. We now have the ability, through the budget rules that we have in the Senate, with our three-pronged approach, to actually make good on our word. We told people in 2016 what it would look like when we had the chance to replace Obamacare. That was our Better Way plan. That's what this is. So we said in 2016 to our citizens, to the American people, to our constituents, if you give us this chance, this opportunity, this is what we'll do. Now is our chance and our opportunity to do it.
So that's House Speaker Paul Ryan. But many Republican senators are unhappy with the measure, a number of them already saying that if the House Republicans do pass that plan, it's dead on arrival in the Senate. Among those in the Republican-led U.S. Senate who is a chief opponent of what the Republicans in the House are proposing is Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. He calls the House Republican plan Obamacare Lite.
Well, I like the president's statement that it's up for negotiation, and I think those have begun. I spoke with the president yesterday, and I think he's open-minded on this. He wants Obamacare repealed like all conservatives do, but he realizes that conservatives have a lot of objections. The House bill that's been put forward is Obamacare light. It won't work. Premiums and prices will continue to spiral out of control. In fact, they acknowledge it in their own bill by putting an insurance company bailout, $100 billion at least in insurance company bailouts, because the marketplace is still broken. They end up leaving the individual mandate. They do nothing to help the consumer join associations to bring prices down.
That's Kentucky Senator Rand Paul giving his opposition to the House plan to repeal and replace Obamacare. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's The Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. It's 7:36 on this Sunday morning, St. Patrick's Day weekend in Chicago, and I don't think there's anything more appropriate than having as my guest on this St. Patrick's Day weekend my good friend Dan McGrath, the president of Leo High School, former sports editor at the Chicago Tribune, a guy I just kind of call boss is basically it. Dan, welcome, and thanks for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me, Rick. I really appreciate it. It's O Boss today, or
Boss. Mick Boss. No. I like that.
No.
Well, thank you so much. And part of the reason I wanted you here, and you've been on the show before, president of Leo High School, and this is such a big year for Leo, and as part of this 90th anniversary celebration is the Leo Lions are marching in that Southside
Irish
Parade.
We were just delighted to be asked. It's in conjunction with our 90th anniversary, and we have a ton of alums who live in that community, so it's a good opportunity for us to go down there and show them that, you know, we're still alive and kicking and hanging on, and also to reconnect with those neighborhoods, because we used to draw really well from down there. I grew up in the what's now known as Beverly. We always thought of it as Kennedy Park, but now for real estate purposes, everything south of 87th and north of 119th Street is considered Beverly. So, but anyway, I did grow up down there, and Leo used to draw really well from down there. And for various reasons, we don't anymore. But we've really made an effort to reconnect down there. So this is an opportunity to go down there and show the flag, and everybody that Leo's doing well.
And I mean, the roots are deep.
They are. They are indeed. And that's why we were invited 4 years ago. Each of the Brother Rice, Mount Carmel, St. Rita, Mother Macaulay, Marist, all of the high schools that those communities serve, or that are served by those communities, all won a state championship, as did Leo in track and field. So the following year, we were all invited to march, each of the state champions. And so we brought our track team, and the kids were really stunned by how many, hey, my dad went to Leo, or hey, my grandfather went to Leo. They were really impressed and, you know, gratified by the reception that we got. So they were nice enough to give up a Sunday morning, and we stopped for lunch on the way back to school. And I said to one of the fellas, what'd you think? And he said, oh, Mr. McGrath, it was nice. Everybody was really nice to me. Everybody yelled out, hey, my dad went to Leo. And then he paused for a minute and he said, Mr. McGrath, I haven't seen that many white people in my life. So it's a cultural it's a cultural exchange as well. But our guys, really, we're looking forward to it. It's going to be a real nice day.
Well, let's talk about Leo and you know, Auburn Gresham. Yeah. And, you know, this is a student population. We talk about everything in economically depressed areas. Yeah. and outlets for youth so that they don't go to the wrong side.
Yeah,
here,
it's, you know, you'd never know our guys are economically deprived. They're cheerful. They're just really good guys. We are blessed. If I'm having a rough day or in a bad mood, I just walk the halls and I see a kid that I know he's here for the right reasons, and I know that he's being well served by being here. And it's a special place. It really is. We're able to help these guys along. You know, I went to Leo myself. More than half the guys who work there are Leo graduates, and we really believe in the place. We think it helped us get off to a good start in life. And we're trying to create the same opportunities for the young guys we have today. And sad to say, it's needed more than ever, because there is so much carnage, and I don't want to use President Trump's word, but there is so much uncontrollable stuff on the streets of the South and West Sides, and you know, anything we can do to steer these kids in the other direction and, you know, get them pointed and toward positive things. And, you know, 90% of our guys go to college. We're going to graduate 100% of our seniors for the eighth year in a row. We've got a dynamic new principal, a young man named Shaka Rawls, who's a Leo graduate. And there's just a lot of really good things happening within the building, as there are at other schools on the south and west sides. But the unfortunate thing is the bad things dominate the headlines. And I understand that. I know how that works. So we're kind of it's incumbent on us to just make sure that our guys, you know, keep doing the right things. And, you know, we're a Catholic school, but most of our kids are not Catholic. And yet we our Catholic identity is very important to us, but our theology is very much values-based. You know, be a good person, be a responsible citizen, make good decisions, do the right thing. And that works for
respect.
Us. Yeah, respect. Respect yourselves, respect your teachers, respect your fellow students. And one of the great things is the kids pick up on that. They buy into it. We always talk about the Leo brotherhood and the Leo family, and it's not just a buzzword. It really, you know, we had a young man, Malcolm Bell. He's one of my favorites. He was with us for his freshman year. Then there were some family issues that caused him to leave for his sophomore year, and he came back for his junior year. And I was really happy to see him, and I thought it was him. I recognized his face, and I went up to him in the cafeteria, and I said, Malcolm, yeah, Mr. McGrath, how you doing? And I said, oh, man, I'm glad to see you back. You know, what's up? And he says, Mr. McGrath, I miss the brotherhood. And they really do. They sense, you know, we're a small school, so everybody knows each other. Nobody falls through the cracks. Nobody's just a number. And I think they appreciate that, and they do sense that they're part of something. They're part of something special, and the brotherhood really does mean a lot to them, as it does to us.
Well, and you touched on it about just the legacy of Leo and the alumni network that is just enormous.
Yes, our 90th year, and not too many institutions in Chicago can claim 90 years in the same location, but we do, and we're very proud of it. You know, you mentioned Auburn Gresham, and it's had its challenges, but you know, a lot of residents, a lot of businesses, even a lot of churches abandoned the neighborhood, but we never did. We stayed right there and continued to do what we do, which is prepare young men to prepare young men for life. We had a good meeting this week with Carlos Nelson from the Auburn Gresham Neighborhood Association, and we're looking at some beautification projects and perhaps a little bit of expansion that'll just make us more vital and important down there, and that's very important as well because we're a real anchor in that community. I hate to think what would happen to that general area if we were to leave. So it sort of strengthens our will to stay. And you know, but we're having a great year. This 90th anniversary has been tremendous. We had a fundraiser back in November. We gave Mr. Andy McKenna a Lifetime Achievement Award, which was long overdue and truly well-deserved. He's been a tremendous advocate for us, and we were able to replenish our scholarship fund. We got a new furnace. We paved the parking lot across the street, so there's some physical improvements going on, as well as you know, the generous financial aid we're able to offer to our students. So this has really been kind of a watershed year for us. We're doing pretty well.
And I also think Leo is an example, too, of what perhaps suburbanites, people that grew up in the suburbs, don't appreciate the role of what the Catholic schools are as part of the overall school system in Chicago.
We save the public schools a lot of money by doing, you know, what we do. You'll get a kick out of this, too. When I was an editor, which I was for many years, I could always point out which reporters had gone to Catholic school because they could spell, they knew grammar, they knew how to structure a sentence. And I'd call reporters aside and I'd say, you went to Catholic school, didn't you? Yeah, how'd you know? Well, you know. So, but now it's more than that. I mean, we do teach grammar and spelling and all that stuff you have to have, but we also teach, you know, social justice and society and technology. And high school education nowadays is much more expansive than the one I got, which is which surprises me that Leo would hire me based on that. But we really try to produce well-rounded young men.
But a high school education today has to be so
for
much
sure.
More.
Oh, the competition, you know, the with technology. I think, you know, I saw a story last night about driverless trucks and how that threatens long-haul trucking. And, you know, here's another sector where technology is going to eliminate a lot of jobs. You know, and so our kids have to be well versed enough in technology to be qualified for the jobs that are there. And we've got another fabulous gift from a Leo alum, Sam Lino, from the class of 1963. So we were able to refurbish our computer lab and update all our technology and, you know, fit it with state-of-the-art equipment. So now we can really describe ourselves as a technology-savvy school, and there's some meat on those bones. We're not just talking about it anymore. It really is. It's reality.
Yeah, I mean, we hear that argument about globalization, mm-hmm. but it's actually automation, digitalization that is really...
And in our case, it's preparation. You know, the guys have to know what's out there, and to that end... We do a lot of field trips. We bring in a lot of speakers. We really try to show the guys that there's a life beyond the neighborhood, and, you know, it's there for you. You know, we expose them to it and try to give them a basic sense of what they have to do, you know, to be ready for it. And that's been a pretty good approach for us.
So when you say 90% of your students go on to college, mm-hmm. what colleges do they go to?
A lot of the state schools, Northern, Western, Illinois State, the class of 2016, we had four graduates from U of I. Three of them were in engineering. One of them was the only African-American in the aerospace engineering program, Edward Vaughn. He was our valedictorian. We're very proud of him. Another young man, Eder Cruz Alvarado, got a Gates Millennium Scholarship, and he wound up going to Valparaiso. He got a degree in mechanical engineering. He applied. They accepted him. They offered him a very generous financial package, and he was set. And then the Gates Millennium Scholarship came through, and this is the best you can have. This pays all the way through graduate school. You can get a doctorate on Bill Gates if you stay in a science or medicine or technology-related field, and, of course, engineering qualifies. So when Eder got the scholarship, Ms. Latifi, who's a math teacher and the head of our National Honor Society, she sort of walked Eder through the process, and the deadline was late October. So now it's like late February, early March, and we haven't had anything. And she said, "Hey, Eder, that Gates Millennium, do you ever hear anything on that?" He was, "Oh, yeah, I got it." Totally cavalier. And we were like, holy bananas. You know, this was a huge deal for us, and, boy, we milked it too. But anyway, Eder was such a good, loyal guy that we sat him down. He'd applied to a number of schools, and he got in every one of them, and now Bill Gates is going to pay for it. And he said, "No, I'm going to stick with Valparaiso. They were real nice to me. They made me feel welcome, like they really wanted me there." And he did. And he stayed. He graduated. He got his degree in engineering. And he's working for an auto parts manufacturer now. And, you know, he's well on his way. And he comes up and talks to the kids. He came to the 90th anniversary celebration and took part in a panel discussion. And so he's... We expect to start getting checks from him any day now because he's making pretty good money. But, it was just I was really impressed with that. You know, he made up his mind he was going to go to Valparaiso, and even after circumstances changed for the better, you know, he stayed true to his commitment. But that's the type of guy he was, really impressive young man.
We're speaking with Dan McGrath. He's the president of Leo High School and a former boss of mine, indirectly, at the Chicago Tribune. We'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, 312-981-7200. It's 7:51 approaching on this Sunday morning, Central Daylight Time. Joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio, my good friend Dan McGrath, president of Leo High School. And Dan, I know that... A guy that you, a classmate who was meant a lot to you, recently passed away, and I know you wanted to.
Oh, thanks for bringing that up, Rick. I want to just acknowledge the Stan Turner's family and pass along our condolences. Stan was a year ahead of me at Leo, and the late '60s. If you grew up in Chicago, it was kind of a fractious time, and Leo was no exception because the surrounding neighborhood was really undergoing a lot of change. And there could be occasionally some tension at school, but Stan was one of those guys that just everybody looked up to, and just a really, really solid young man, terrific basketball player. After Leo, he went right on the police department. He rose to the rank of detective. He was a very had a distinguished career with the CPD. He was the lead investigator on the Leonard Clark case, as you might recall.
All right.
and just a tremendously solid guy. He passed away, and I went to the service yesterday. His wife was kind enough to list Leo for memorial gifts in lieu of flowers. So I went to this funeral yesterday, and we were gathered before, and every single conversation or every single recollection began with, man, Stan could jump out of the gym. He really was. He was about 5'10 or no more than 5'11, and man, could he get up. And he used to jump center again. You know, the Catholic League was really good in those days, and, you know, St. Rita had a 6'7 guy, and Mount Carmel had a 6'6 guy, and Stan would go out there for the center jump and take every one of them. And not only a great athlete, but just a really good guy. You know, he really gave the school a lot of spirit. And as I say, no matter how tense or fractious things got, Stan was one of those guys that everybody looked up to. And I was really, really sad to hear of his passing, but I was really gratified that his wife would be so thoughtful as to list Leo as in memoriam. So we went to the service yesterday, and it was very nice. So I just wanted to
And our condolences as well. Absolutely. And to get more information on Leo High School, what's the school's website?
Well, just call me up, and I'll come over to your house.
It's full service. Yes.
www.leohighschool.org. I never tire talking about it, but it's you know. It'll be 8 years. It's coming up on eight years, which is amazing to me. I didn't have any timetable in mind when I took the job. It was just as long as I feel like I have the energy and
the kids the
enthusiasm
give you the energy.
For. They surely do. They surely do. But anyway, it's www.leohighschool.org.
I want to talk a little sports while I got you here.
Who, me?
Yeah.
I heard you coming in.
Well, I want to start with Cutler.
Well, it just had to. You know, I don't know that Mike Glennon is any better. I suspect he isn't, to be honest. But they had to make a change. You couldn't tell the Bears you were moving forward and then present them with another year of Jay Cutler. You just couldn't. And he may go somewhere else and, you know, flourish with a fresh start. On the other hand, he was here 8 years, and we kept hearing, oh, with all that talent. Well, sometimes all that talent just doesn't come to the fore, but it's pretty clear it was not going to happen here. So let's start over.
And how long does the rebuilding of the Bears take?
Well, this is Pace's third draft. He better hit some home runs. I mean, he got some, I would say, ancillary help out of this last draft. You know, some of the lower guys. When Floyd was on the field, Leonard Floyd, when he was on the field, he was pretty good. But the other first-round pick, Kevin White, has barely seen the field in 2 years. But some of the, you know, fourth and fifth rounders look like they'll be useful, you know, solid players, special teams guys. But let's face it, the NFL is almost like the NBA in that it's a star-driven league. You got to have difference makers, and the Bears are woefully lacking in that area. Even Alshon Jeffrey, I was never as enamored of him as some of my colleagues. But on the other hand, if you're going to just kick him to the curb, you better have a replacement. That's what I think they were lucky with when they let Forte go. Justin Howard, is that the kid from Indiana, stepped in and had a really good year. But I don't know that they saw that coming, but, you know, it did work out for them. I'm not sure. As I say, I was not a big Jeffrey guy, but on the other hand, you know, who's going to play wide receiver?
Right. You were off-air defending Northwestern's performance.
Yeah, it was a tough comeback. You know, they had a tough game Friday night against Maryland. It was the last game on the program. Then they had to come turnaround play the next day. And, you know, Wisconsin's tough to play in any circumstances. And they really don't have any depth. They only play about seven guys. So I could see that, you know, they just didn't have their legs. And the Big Ten is funny this year. I don't think there's a Final Four team, but there's like nine teams you can throw a blanket over. They're all, you know, roughly equal. And I think Northwestern kind of creeps into that category. You know, great win over Wisconsin earlier without Lindsay. Great win over Michigan. The Purdue game was, and they beat Maryland in Maryland's backyard. You know, that was pretty impressive on Friday night. But they'll get in. I don't think there's any question they'll get in. They'll be an eight or a nine, and if they win that first game, you know, then they'll have to play a one or a two.
Right.
Gets a little tougher. But I think Chris Collins has done a terrific job, and I have a lot of respect for him because when he took over, you know, it took him a while to get his players in, and a lot of coaches would, oh, how do you expect me to win with this? But he never said that. He, you know, this is my team. I'm going to coach my team. And he was as loyal to those Carmody kids that he inherited as he is to the guys he's coaching now. And I thought that really showed me something. He's handled this with a lot of class.
John Gross losing his job at Illinois.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but again, it's sort of like Cutler. You know, he's a really good guy, and he might be a pretty good coach, but, you know, 5 years, he just didn't get it done. They were 16 under 500 in the Big Ten, only made one tournament appearance, and that's hard to take at Illinois. You've got to, I think that when Mike Thomas was the AD, he kind of set them back. You know, he hired his football coach and his basketball coach from the MAC. Beckman, the football, he was kind of a clown, to be honest. And Gross, he seemed a little overmatched. And now, you know, both football and basketball, the Big Ten is just overrun with really good coaches.
Right.
And if you're going to compete at that level, you know, you got to have a guy. I wouldn't be surprised if they make a run at Hoiberg. You know, Josh Whitman, the AD, he hired Lovey. He kind of has, he might just have an affinity for pro guys. And Hoiberg had real success as a college coach at Iowa State. So,
well, and the pro guys bring a little cachet.
They
to
do.
A,
they surely
to a
absolutely.
Battered program,
absolutely. And especially, you know, that the high end kids now, they're all thinking about the league. You know, the number of kids who play 4 years in college, it's a joke almost. That's why Notre Dame always does well, because Mike Bray is able to keep these guys around and coach them up, and by the time they're juniors and seniors, you know, they're ready to play good college ball. But that doesn't happen at a lot of places. And there's even a sort of a stigma to a college junior or senior, you know, hey, if you're so good, how come you're not in the league?
Yeah, why, yeah,
you
know? Why are you still here?
Right. So it's college hoops is it really takes kind of a genius to navigate college. I still love the game, but boy, there's a lot to deal with.
Well, and with the big dance coming up ahead,
yeah.
Be very, very interesting.
I think my Marquettes will make it, but first round loss in the tournament, in the Big East tournament, didn't do them any good. They'll be one of those 8 or 9s too.
Watch those 8 or 9 teams.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. Dan McGrath, president of Leo High School.
Rick, thanks for having me.
Thank
it's
you so much.
Delight.
Enjoy
and,
enjoy the parade on the south side
today.
I'm going
to walk, and then I might find a cold beer somewhere.
Yeah, I bet you will.
It's going to be a good day for Leo. Thanks again for having me.
Thank you. We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead, we'll be speaking with State Representative Chris Welch, Democrat from Hillside.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. Welcome back to the second hour of your Sunday Spin on March 12th, the second Sunday in March. It's 8:10 on Central Daylight Time on this Sunday morning. So make sure everybody you got your clocks going here. It was a little rough this morning, I'll admit, for myself to get here to the Allstate Showcase Studio here in Tribune Tower. But joining me here in the Allstate Showcase Studio is State Representative Chris Welch, Democrat from Hillside. Thank you so much for making the time change adjustment and making it here to the studio this morning.
Good morning, Rick. Happy to be here. I got to tell you, it's quite early for me still. My body's on the old time.
we're all on the older we get, the more we're on the old time, I think, is what we say.
Absolutely.
Well, I wanted to have you in because I know you've got this legislation called, it's the Local Government Tax Accountability Act.
Yeah.
And I think we've talked about this bill in the past, I think last year, and it kind of got hung up in the hoops. Why don't you just start out and just explain to people what this bill would do?
Well, you're talking, Rick, about House Bill 2717. And I filed this bill because I represent 12 near west suburban communities. Maywood's right in the center of my district. It's a community that's struggling financially, just like many communities across this great state. And here is a bill that doesn't cost anyone anything if they don't find any money. It gives municipalities the authority to hire these outside consultants, basically to audit the Department of Revenue's sales tax receipts distribution. And what we have seen is that the Department of Revenue, which is made up of a bunch of humans, make mistakes, and they send money to the wrong places. And we've seen it recently where the city of Joliet found $400,000 that they didn't know belonged to them until one of these outside consulting companies found it for them. So this is a great opportunity where in a time where people are turning over pillow cushions looking for coins, you know, let's give them some authority to hire these companies to go out and find money that rightfully belongs to them.
Now, as I understand it, Department of Revenue has raised privacy concerns.
Well, they've raised privacy concerns that you can't share this information with outside parties and things of that nature, and I think that's one of the reasons why the bill is needed. But I also think the Department of Revenue just doesn't want people to realize the magnitude of the mistakes that they're making. Many municipalities across the state have had situations where they have found that their sales tax receipts have gone to the wrong place because DOR mixes up the zip codes. And so I think it's they just don't want to know how big the problem is, and I think we should know.
Yeah, and this is, again, this isn't about more money. This is about existing money that Department of Revenue collects the sales tax from the retailers, and it's supposed to be rebated back out to the municipalities.
Correct.
This is not about any kind of increases or tax increases or anything of that nature.
It's not a tax increase in any way. It's monies that should rightfully belong to a municipality, and these outside consultants are trained, have trained eyes, and know what they're looking for. And many times, you know, it's a wonderful surprise to a municipality to find out that, hey, wow, I got $400,000 due to me.
Yeah, and you've got municipalities that are struggling with their own tax base. You have the fact that the municipality is being caught in the switches and the Springfield stalemate.
Local municipalities are under attack, and, you know, they can only raise property taxes so much. Property tax owners, you know, can't take any more. And we have a situation where the local government distribution fund is always under attack. That's a large source of revenue that these municipalities depend on.
That's the portion of the state income tax that is channeled back to local municipalities.
That's correct. So here, let's give them a tool where they can go out there and find revenues that may belong to them or that does belong to them that was probably sent to the wrong place. I don't see a downside to this.
But it still has trouble getting traction.
It's amazing.
In Springfield.
You know, it seems to happen like that in Springfield sometimes.
Well, there's a lot of things that might look to be common sense tend to have problems in Springfield.
Yeah, I'm still figuring it out 4 years later.
And if you figure it out, let me know after all of the years I've been watching this. I want to ask you, I touched on the stalemate. We saw the efforts in the Senate by Senate President John Cullerton, Democrat, Republican leader Christine Redonio for the, quote, grand bargain, basically the grand bargain evaporating. And we're back to a lot of the rhetoric that's going on here. And I think there are real questions about barring any kind of calamity or some kind of legal case like AFSCME or in the state employee paychecks, those kinds of things. Absent that, we may go to 2018 without ever having a full year budget in this state.
Rick, it is truly my fear that we will go till 2018 without a budget. And in my opinion, there is one person who, if he decides to do his job, we can get a budget tomorrow, and that's the governor. The governor is the CEO of this state. It is his constitutional responsibility to propose a balanced budget to the Illinois General Assembly to consider. And we're in year three of his administration. And he's had three budget addresses that he's delivered to the General Assembly, and he has yet to propose a balanced budget. And just as we saw with this grand bargain fiasco, the governor encouraged them in his State of the State and in his budget address to continue talking, keep working. They're doing great work. And then it was the governor who interjected at the last minute, pulling Republicans off the floor and killed the deal. And so I just believe that that's all an proof that there's one guy who's controlling whether or not this state has a budget. And I just believe Bruce Rauner, just like he said when he was candidate Rauner, wants to govern in a state of chaos.
Well, the governor says that people who say just do a budget, that's a code from Democrats that is just do a tax increase.
Well, I don't buy that narrative. But what we do know is that in order to get a budget deal, there's going to have to be a combination of cuts in revenue. That's the opinion of everyone. To do a responsible budget, it's going to take a combination of cuts in revenue. What that revenue looks like, I don't know. But there's certainly proposals that should be considered. I have a bill on file that talks about, closing corporate loopholes and carried interest loopholes. And other colleagues have things on the file like the financial transaction tax, taxing those folks over there on LaSalle Street. There's ways that we can create revenue without passing it on to the regular guy. At least let's have these conversations seriously and get a budget passed like the great state of Illinois deserves.
We're speaking with Democratic State Representative Chris Welch from Hillside. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. (312) 981-7200 is our phone number. This is your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue. Joining me here in studio is State Representative Chris Welch, Democrat from Hillside. We were talking about the Springfield stalemate, and I find this kind of an interesting position that we're in, is that in the last election cycle, with the legislative elections, that it was the voice messaging of the Republicans, subsidized by the governor, that everything is Mike Madigan's fault and the Democrats he controls. And now it seems like that message might be mooted somewhat because of Governor Rauner and the fact of his financial resources, which he wants to use to elect a Republican, erode the Democratic majority in the legislature. And so we really have this kind of control cycle going at each other here.
Well, I think if anything, the events of the last couple of weeks, particularly with the grand bargain, it shows that it's not Mike Madigan who's holding things up. It's Governor Rauner. It's Boss Rauner and the guy who controls Republicans. He single-handedly pulled people off the floor and killed a deal that they had been working on very hard for weeks, that the Senate President and the Minority Leader, Christine Redonio, who took a lot of heat from people to put that deal together, and the governor killed it. So it's Boss Rauner and the Republicans he controls, and that should be the narrative. And I think that's been going on for 4 years, and we just finally saw it bubble to light.
I want to talk about
For 2 years, I'm sorry.
Right. I want to talk about some of the legislation that you also have, other legislation you have pending. I know one subject matter you're very interested in is the issue of these so-called sanctuaries for sanctuary cities, sanctuary counties, as far as immigration, particularly in light of kind of the renewed efforts by the Trump administration.
Yeah, I'm fully supportive of sanctuary cities and sanctuary status. I have a bill, House Bill 426, though, is Immigration Safe Zones Act. That's different than sanctuary cities. What we're saying is that at a minimum, there should be some safe places, safe spaces that people should be able to go without living in fear. And I think most people can agree that schools and hospitals are those types of places. Those are places of learning, places of healing, places of care. And you shouldn't be afraid to go there because you're afraid if you are there, ICE is going to bust in and raid the place and deport you. So, that's a bill that's pending, and this week it's probably going to get a lot of action because there's an immigration day of action in Springfield on Wednesday, and I intend to speak at the rally, and I'm hoping that we're close to calling the bill.
Where does that bill stand in the process right now?
Well, we're very close. It's on the House floor. It's out of committee. I'm working the roll call, and we're getting very close.
But we don't know what the governor might want to say. He says he's for comprehensive immigration reform, but also doesn't believe in kind of the concept of sanctuary cities, of choosing where you enforce the law.
Well, again, this is not even sanctuary. This is safe.
Sure, I understand that.
And this is saying if you have a valid warrant, they're going to be allowed in. And the governor is on record. Last week he did an interview on WBEZ where he says Illinois should be a welcoming state to immigrants. here's his opportunity to show that by signing House Bill 426. He also gave a speech a couple of weeks ago where he talked about being, his grandparents being immigrants. And, you know, the governor of all people should want to send the signal to their state and to the rest of the world that Illinois is a place that you can come and live without fear of deportation.
You're also the chairman of the House Higher Education Committee, and we had Tom Cross, the chairman of the Board of Higher Ed, on recently. And even since then, we've seen universities, public universities, taking steps to have to curb the number of course offerings, of degree offerings. We have the issue out Northeastern Illinois about student workers losing their jobs because of how they fall in the rank of with full-time employees who have to take a week's furlough. Are we getting very close to the tipping point here as far as education?
Well, as far as higher education,
For
sure, because we funded K through 12 the last 2 years. Higher education is really suffering. And the last 2 years under Governor Rauner, we have seen about $1.5 billion in cuts to our higher education system. And just last week, I was out at Northeastern University, and, you know, teachers are being forced to take furloughs during spring break. Students are being laid off from their work-study jobs. You know, it's unbelievable what's going on, and it's tragic. You know, you got to understand it. By investing in higher education, we're investing in Illinois' economy. We lift up Illinois through our higher education system because those are the people, if you educate them here, they're going to stay here, they're going to buy homes, raise families, and pay taxes. And to allow what is happening to our higher education system, I think the governor is being derelict in his duties.
Well, and I also saw a report, too, that when it comes to even students and tech startups through institutions, through higher education institutions, that Illinois, far and away, you know, is the leader in the nation.
It is. And just look at what's happening at U of I alone. The research park down there is probably second only to Simi Valley, if not, number one now. I mean, and it's a huge economic engine for the state. And we don't want to risk losing the next generation because people aren't coming to Illinois schools. And we already see it happening. And if we don't resolve this budget crisis soon, particularly when it comes to higher education, we are going to lose the next generation to other states.
That's Democratic State Representative Chris Welch, Democrat from Hillside. Representative, thank you so much for joining me this morning in studio on Central Daylight Time Sunday.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to Republican Congressman Rodney Davis. Rodney Davis is a Republican who represents Taylorville in Central Illinois.
Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
8:35 on this Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and this is your Sunday Spin. Earlier, we were talking when we were doing our national spin through politics about the unveiling of the House Republican plan to repeal and replace Obamacare, and how some Senate Republicans are already saying that this plan is dead on arrival. But there's also a group that's aligned with House Speaker Paul Ryan that's already out with ads urging reluctant Republicans to support the measure. Here's one ad that's being run.
The Republicans' American Health Care Act versus Obamacare. Obamacare is full of job-destroying mandates. The new plan eliminates them. Obamacare puts bureaucrats in control. The Republicans' plan puts patients and doctors in charge. Obamacare stuck families with soaring premiums. The new plan provides more choices and lower costs.
Repeal and replace Obamacare.
Tell Congressman Labrador to vote with President Trump.
That's one of the ads that's being run by the American Action Network. Well, joining me now on the phone is Republican Congressman Rodney Davis. Congressman Davis represents Central Illinois, and he's from Taylorville. Congressman, thank you for joining me this morning.
Hey, Rick, great to be on. It was great to see you last week, too. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was very good to see you. And I have to point out to everybody that as I saw Congressman Davis leaving an event at the City Club of Chicago. He was leaving in an ambulance, but he was but he was upright when he left.
Absolutely, it was a great ride. I learned a lot from the Superior Ambulance folks, especially about Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement processes.
And they kept you in the ambulance so that they could force that listening, right?
Those are always good venues for that, of course.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. And what about the fate of this House Republican plan? You've heard several major medical groups have come out in opposition. But legislatively, I think what's even more relevant is the fact that you have senators expressing a great deal of opposition.
Yeah, Senate opposition to House bills is nothing new. And then do I think that the existing plan as introduced will be the one that is passed through the Senate and the House into the president's desk? No, there will be some amendments. And that's why we would urge groups who are opposed to offer up their suggestions. You know, I've looked at what Bill Clinton said a few months ago about the status quo. He said Obamacare is failing. And if Bill Clinton thinks it's failing, we can't protect what is already broken. You know, you've got Medicaid, Rick, that the reimbursements from the federal government are going to go down 10% in 2 years. That means Illinois is going to have to come up with hundreds of millions of dollars that you and I both know they don't have. If we don't do something to fix this, you know, I'm abdicating my responsibility then.
I know that I believe on Monday the Congressional Budget Office is supposed to kind of come out with its scoring of the plan, which some people have described it as make or break. Do you believe that that's a make or break issue?
In my 4 years I've been in Washington, I love it when people use the Congressional Budget Office to their advantage, and then when they don't agree with the numbers, they just disregard it. But I'll give you a couple facts about the CBO. You know, we implemented their ability to use dynamic scoring, which I think will help in this endeavor. But I helped write the last farm bill. That's a committee I serve on. And they estimated that our policy changes would save $23 billion in mandatory spending, Rick. In reality, over the last 4 years, or last 3 years, actually, the farm bill has saved $104 billion in mandatory spending. They were wrong. We believe that good policies actually make a difference and grow our economy, and that's what's going to save taxpayer dollars. And I hope that's the case this time.
I know one of the criticisms that's been raised over the House Republican health care plan is the issue of these various kind of tax breaks for insurance companies and insurance CEOs, and people are finding that to be a troubling provision.
Well, I think any time you've looked at any replacement plan that we've ever offered, and remember, Obamacare passed before I got to Washington. I'm left with cleaning up the mess that you know, was once a $2 billion website that cost taxpayers an overwhelming amount of money. Still doesn't work that well. We've seen Medicaid grow exponentially because people qualify for Medicaid rather than being able to get a job and a career and a economic certainty that they want in their family. Our job should be to get people off of Medicaid, not add more people onto the system. And then you've got an architect, Rick, Zeke Emanuel, the mayor's brother, who actually helped craft this. And all you have to do is read his book, and you can see that he fully projected the employer-based healthcare system to be gone by the year 2024, 2025. How do you design a system that you know is set up to fail and not ask for it to be fixed by people like us? Now, you mentioned the taxes. You know, we have always been for refundable tax credits. Rand Paul, who's using his publicity stunts right now, has had refundable tax credits in his plan, too. We believe that will get us more affordable, more competitively priced insurance for everyone and still maintain the popular provisions that I'm in favor of, like covering pre-existing conditions and making sure that there are no lifetime caps on benefits.
What about as far as children up to 26?
Yeah, absolutely. That's in there, too.
But I mean, those issues seem to be whatever happens, that those are have to be part of anything that's a replacement.
And it's part of ours. Our plan that we've laid out has those three provisions in it. And what those who want to support the status quo that is failing, and even Bill Clinton says it's failing, right? What they don't tell you is when they talk about tax breaks for insurance companies, there are bigger, more costly breaks for insurance companies in the existing plan called the Risk Corridor Program, basically allowing insurance companies to be bailed out for not making a profit. And those types of bailouts are what we're against. We want to use taxpayer dollars to give taxpayers relief rather than insurance companies.
So I know this is, I believe, gone through two of the three committees so far.
Yes, it went through Ways and Means, Energy and Commerce, and some pretty long and very transparent and open processes.
But it's still a matter of negotiation.
Well, every bill is. You know, that's what the legislative process is about. That's why I always chuckled when we would have those who have always opposed me, come up and ask me where my plan is before Donald Trump was even sworn in as president of the United States. And I would refer them back to the Better Way Agenda, our framework. And they would say, well, we want more specifics. And I said, that's the legislative process. We will get a bill. We will put out specifics. We will debate those specifics. And my job as a legislator is to actually make those specifics better, keep them the status quo, or vote against it.
What about within the House Republican caucus itself? Because there's, the talk that the Freedom Caucus has extreme reservations about this, the feeling that people just wanted to see a repeal and worry about replacement later.
Well, I'm part of a group that wants to make sure we don't pull the rug out from anybody with existing coverage, and that means our Medicaid population too, Rick. You know, we delay changes to Medicaid until 2020, which is the exact same year that states like Illinois would have faced a crisis in coming up with hundreds of millions of dollars to continue the status quo. But I've got some of my colleagues, many on my side of the aisle, that want to end that sooner. I'm not for that. I want to see us actually ensure that we have a better transition to a better healthcare system that's more affordable. But there are a lot of folks in my caucus, Rick, that, they've got to figure out a way to get to yes. They've been the opposition party since they got to Washington, in many cases in 2010, 2011. And now we've got the president. We've got the Senate still in the House. They've got to work with us to actually come up with solutions. And a few hours after I saw you Monday, Rick, I was on a plane back to Washington, D.C. It was the next morning. And that next day, I sat down with a group of fellow deputy whips with President Trump and Vice President Pence, and they are both 100% behind our House plan, which is why you've seen these ads, which is why the president is personally working with many of these legislators to get them to yes.
We're speaking with Congressman Rodney Davis, Republican from Taylorville in Central Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on a sunny Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago. And on the phone is Congressman Rodney Davis, Republican from Taylorville. And we've been talking about the House Republican plan to repeal and replace Obamacare. Congressman, you touched on one point about the 2020 year issue of Medicaid. And I know Governor Rauner has not spoken in specifics, but he did say recently that he did find himself in opposition to a number of elements of this House Republican plan. He declined to enumerate, but obviously, given Illinois' financial situation, as you noted, the issue with Medicaid reimbursement, which is scheduled to drop in 2020 anyway, but that being a very key factor, I think, in where he's coming from.
Well, if I was a governor, Republican like you know, Governor Rauner or a Democrat in this country. I would be concerned about the status quo and any plan that's going to affect what's been in place in many cases before they even took office. So I get his concern. You know, I've been working with the governor's office and his agency directors to talk about, you know, what's going to happen if we do nothing versus what we can expect with more flexibility that I believe the Republican plan will allow. And I would urge him to talk to Vice President Pence, a governor who, is former governor who's in the process of helping to change things and make it better for all of those who we both serve in Illinois.
But it seems like the Medicaid issue being particularly acute only because of the state of Illinois' financial straits.
Well, and that's the thing that we have been discussing on the front end with many of those in his administration, also with his agency directors, to talk about the impact of not only a new bill and new law, but the impact of the status quo if we do nothing, which is going to be which is going to cost Illinois hundreds of millions of dollars to continue the status quo. And I think Governor Rauner and his administration and all of us agree that if we can actually work toward moving people off of Medicaid and into jobs and into their own health care or their employer-based health care, that's going to help us all. And that's what we believe our system is going to do when we make these changes, Rick.
I want to shift gears to something that we talked, and frankly, we were both at the City Club and heard from Congressman Roskam about the issue of tax reform, of tax changes. And one of the things that I'm not hearing much talk about is as the effort is being made to streamline individual tax rates and streamline just the tax reporting process. We know about the home mortgage deduction is going to stay, the charitable deduction is going to stay in some form. But what we're not hearing a lot about is the fate of state and local tax deduction. And I'm wondering what you're hearing, what your thoughts are on what happens if we were to lose that.
Well, what we're looking at is a plan to put out that everybody, again, is going to be able to have their say. The initial plan that's always put out in Washington and in Springfield, for that matter, is usually never the plan that passes in the end. It gets better. Or it can get worse, and it could lose votes from people like me. But in our case, what we're trying to do on the individual side, Rick, and I agree with you, I don't think it gets enough attention, is to reduce the overall burden of filing taxes and reduce the overall burden of paying taxes. We would take the current seven rates down to three, up the standard deduction. And when we lay out our plan, I would urge every single taxpayer to take a look at, and I'm sure we'll have a website that you can go to plug your specific income levels in and deductions and see what you would owe under the current tax code versus what you would owe under the new plan that we're putting forth. Whether that includes the state and local deduction, what we're looking for is a revenue-neutral plan that's going to benefit the most Americans. And I want to make one more point, Rick. It was a very surprising point that was made to me when I got to Congress and we started talking about tax reform. Really, only 25% of all Americans, 1 in 4 itemized, 75% of all Americans use the current standard deduction, which is why there's a push to raise that standard deduction for 3/4 of Americans and still allow those who want to deduct and itemize the ability to do so.
Well, the reason I bring up the state and local deduction, obviously because Illinois being a high property tax state, and it seems like there's a view of among some in Congress that for high property tax states that deduction becomes almost some kind of almost a form of federal subsidy.
Yeah, I don't see that. I itemize, and I know many Illinoisans do, but the facts remain, Rick, that 75% of all Americans right now still do not itemize, even with that misperception you just mentioned.
And so when do we get to see more about the tax bill?
Well, the committee is working to put this out. We've worked with all fellow Republicans and those who wanted to join us from the other side, which They kind of laughed at us when we sat down to put our Better Way agenda together, hoping we would have a Republican president that we could work with to implement these major changes. When we laid that framework out over the last year before the presidential election. So if you want to see our initial framework, go to better.gop, and you can take a look at some of the pillars that we put up as to what we are for in tax reform. And I would say over the next month, you'll start to see more detailed plans come out of the House Ways and Means Committee. And there's nobody better on tax reform and tax issues than our own Peter Roskam. And he gave a great rundown of a proposed tax reform bill when he was at the City Club last Monday that you and I were both at. And I got to thank him for his leadership on that and the hard work that he's put in.
That's Congressman Rodney Davis, Republican from Taylorville. Congressman, as always, good to see you, and thanks for joining us this morning.
Rick, as always, thanks for having me, buddy.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Dan McGrath, State Representative Chris Welch, and Congressman Rodney Davis. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for getting up, all of you who changed your clocks appropriately enough, because I got to tell you, Dean, this Sunday is always a rough one for me.
It's a little difficult. I'm okay right now because I was so focused on don't be late, don't be late, don't be late.
The only time I was ever late was time change Sunday.
Oh, yeah. It'll throw you off.
Yes.
Now, talk to me around 3, 4 o'clock today and see how grumpy I am right around then. Then I'll be cursing out the old daylight savings time.
Well, that's why. Can you imagine the Blackhawks? They're playing an 11:30 game today.
Right.
So that means it's a 10:30 game.
Oh, right.
So
that's got to have an effect on.
Yeah, I'm very interested players. to see how fast the legs are moving here.
Yeah, I'm going to guess the Blackhawks did not play yesterday.
They
right?
did not.
So I'm going to guess that maybe this fairly young team may have been out doing a little St. Patrick's Day celebrating last night.
I don't think Coach Q would have allowed that. I'm not so sure, especially since they've lost two in a row.
Oh, well, that's true.
I mean, I think the coach may have been a bit strict with the old boys.
No, you boys be in bed at 8 o'clock.
That's exactly
okay,
right.
Okay, coach. No problem. Yeah, I'm sleeping.
The Ferris Bueller tape. The snoring tape, yes.
Because of the Hawks game today, we have an abbreviated show. We're off at 11 o'clock to make way for pregame. But we've got a jam-packed show, including a visit from the cast of Flanagan's Wake, a long-running Irish-themed production here in Chicago. They decided to take the garbage out of the studio. They waited until we were on the air before they came in and took the garbage out of here.
Fortunately, they left both of us here.
Cleanliness is next to godliness when it comes to garbage removal. So we have Flanagan's Wake, and last weekend I was in L.A. and talked with the cast of Beauty and the Beast, including Alan Menken.
Yes.
Do you know who that is?
Yes.
He has a multi-Oscar winning composer.
The famed Alan Menken.
If you know a Disney song, it Correct. Probably came from the head of Alan Menken, and he was sitting at a piano while I talked with him, and he's telling us how he created some of these songs on the piano.
Oh, cool.
One of the coolest interviews in a long time. We're going to share that in about an hour.